French Imperial Postcolonial Studies and Digital Humanities more broadly. The goal now is to ask you, given what we've kind of set out as the scholarly objective of the project, what are your thoughts on it before we start getting into some of the more detailed topics? Did I hold the 10 minutes even remotely? I think I did. I skipped like half of the slides, but.
I can start us off.
Yeah.
Let me introduce myself first. So I'm David Bamman. I'm an assistant professor at the School of Information at Berkeley, where I do work on core natural language processing, where I develop methodologies for NLP for a number of different languages and domains, but specifically with a focus on empirical questions in the humanities and social sciences. So I do a lot of work on literary NLP in particular, and the ways in which we can use these methods of NLP to reason about texts at a really large scale for literary questions. But I've done a lot of work with historical texts as well, and before my life as a PhD student, I worked at the Perseus Project, which was a large digital library for Greek and Latin. Essentially, so my background is also as a classicist. So these historical questions are also very much of interest to me. Now, the question that Chris raised here about the phenomenon that you mentioned about how France-centric this journal is, how so many of these mentions are about France and not about the rest of the world, it reminds me of work I've seen about a decade ago doing similar things for Wikipedia. About if you take do the same problem and take all of the mentions of places in Wikipedia in different languages, you end up having a very strong focus on the North America for English Wikipedia, on Germany for German Wikipedia, on France for French Wikipedia. So I think that is to be expected. I'm curious at what I think this question of how you go about operationalizing an imagined geography, though as distinct from this idiosyncratic focus on the country itself, is a super interesting question that would be really useful to explore even beyond this question of France in this particular journal. But how do you go about measuring? Like what is an imagined geography as a distinct from geography on its own? Like what is important about this imagination?
It's difficult because all geographies are effectively imagined because of the way in which we present them and understand them. The scholarship around imagined geography is more about how people think about place than perhaps thinking about just concrete representations of what was there. And so, if you get into just like projections, right, we usually think of the Mercator projection when we think of a map, but that is effectively imagined because it makes things in the north so much larger than things in the south, which then impacts how, say, America thinks of itself, perhaps thinking much larger than it really is. But then also you can get into things like, say, Southern identity. So how is it that the American South conceives of itself as a geographic space in its imagination? That is, you know, being Southern is as much an identity as it is a physical place, and the boundaries of that don't map onto actual physical boundaries so much as mental ideas of what it means to be from this imagined region. The scholarship on kind of what an imagined geography is still a bit young from what I've seen, but trying to move, you know, kind of the sorts of insights that geographers have made about how there is no there in terms of the way we represent geography with the sorts of questions that post-colonial scholars have been asking.
I have seen art historical visualizations that I'm not particularly super passionate about, but one way of representing this imagination is through a homunculus, the idea of visualizing whatever data that you're working with as a human form and then accentuating different limbs. It's an interesting conceptual exercise, not necessarily that helpful for this particular data set. It does speak to the metaphor of France as the center, the idea of central governance being the head, the metaphor of like the Leviathan, the limbs being the empire. But I don't think it would be good for a final visualization, but maybe in some kind of iterative exploration it could be valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I wonder how much this imagination is bound up with this, with the dominion of the empire. And I think the plots you showed about so much attention being focused on the American West seem to complicate that.
Yeah.
Because is that really about the empire, or is it just about what people in the 19th century really happen to be jazzed about?
But also, is there a hard, fast line between
yeah,
those?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the French scholarship, or at least American scholarship on French empire, has been very focused on the empire itself, the places that we would identify as politically bounded by French control. Mm-hmm. But it seems like when people are talking about it, at least from this one particular journal, that they're not, you know, they're talking about French Indochina in one article, and then in the very next article talking about the Wild Wild West and gun-toting cowboys and the like. And mm-hmm. if our historical subjects aren't drawing a hard and fast line between them, perhaps to go back to kind of Bernard Porter's part of the point, maybe we actually are effectively cherry-picking when we're trying to understand what that culture really looked like.
And there is Eric Hobsbawm's idea of symbols becoming powerful after their practical demise, right? So this could potentially be extended to colonial empire, that maybe it captures the cultural imagination in the largest popular cultural way after a particular territory has been ceded, that then it has the nostalgia and the once great empire, irrespective of how great it is currently and irrespective of the language around the current colonies. Maybe there's this yearning for the previous Western exploration.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell a bit more about the journal itself?
So the journal itself was... It had the approval from the Ministry of Education for use in schools. So we know that, at least effectively, its circulation included young minds, so we can give you a little bit about the reception. It was published weekly, I have to check. But each article had kind of one, each issue had one large kind of frontispiece picture. And then it was basically imperial news or colonial news from all over the empire, mixed with short fictional narratives, usually adventure stories of this, that, or the other adventurer out in this new space, discovering new things and telling the French readership about it.
Do you know anything about the ship or the publication, the reasons to publish?
There were lots of different colonial publications at this time in France. They had the École Coloniale, which was a French school for building of colonial administrators. Most of it was to, it depends on who you ask, which scholar you ask, but some of it has to do with kind of pumping the French imagination and saying, like, this is a justifiable thing. The École Coloniale had a lot of trouble justifying itself to the French populace. French Republican administrators saw kind of this new push for empire as a way of getting revenge against Germany from the Franco-Prussian War. And so, but they were met with a lot of resistance from largely conservatives who were saying, you know, this isn't actually financially helpful, it's not necessary, we really can scale it back. And so most of these publications were coming out of these sorts of kind of Republican, small or Republican administrators who really were trying to hype up empire at the end of the 19th century. So there is that kind of source bias of this is very strongly pro-imperial publication. And you can kind of get that from the, I have it here. This was the front matter to when they collected the kind of first 30 years of it. And they said, where has the Journal de Voyage not taken its thousands upon thousands of readers over more than 20 years? No country of the world is unknown to our readers. With their precious guide, they have traveled the blinding sands of Central Africa and the tangled jungles of the Far East. The green forests and the immense prairies of the two Americas are no longer secrets for them. And the mysterious decors of India and the pagodas of China and the flowered countrysides of Japan have charmed them with their attractions. So it's very much trying to invite people into this imagined, you know, Eurocentric but Euro-dominated world space.
I just want to pick up on this idea of what's imagined geography and thinking about how this isn't just a periodical about the empire, it's really about the world. And so it seems like one of the things that would be cool to do is to explore what you just said by kind of having, dividing up this corpus into how do these articles, what is the rhetoric, the discourse around places that are actually part of the empire at a given time,
mm-hmm.
and those that are not, and how are those languages different from each other, or are they the same, right? I mean,
so
that's, because I think what, like a lot of the work that Pluto and I have done is you pour so much effort into just getting these named entities, right? Just
yeah.
finding the names of places in old French texts. But then what's actually interesting is the language that surrounds those place names. So what is the kind of emotion? What are the verbs and adjectives and adverbs that are being used in relation to place names that helps us get out the nature of what's being imagined? Because they're not imagining, well, they are imagining the place, but what about the place are they
yeah.
getting at? And then being able to see that distinction for old empire, new empire, non-empire, or British empire, right? So is really interesting. And then that, you know, gets at, you know, how you can use your gazetteer to help you do that.
And it also gets to the question of, is a map actually the right way to present an imagined geography? Because, you know, even today, people can tell you all about what they think about the Middle East, but probably can't locate it on a map. And I
yeah.
think the same is going to be true in the 19th century, that they have ideas of the, you know, about the blinding sands of Central Africa, but they may not be able to even point to Africa on a map. And so does it make sense to create an imagined geography using some sort
right.
of cartographic
like,
visualization?
Are there maps in the journal that these texts are referring to? What do those maps look like?
Yeah.
And I'm going to bracket a question about all the illustrations.
That's one of the ones we have not all
yeah.
figured out, is what to do with them all.
Yeah.
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 So you have the scanned images as well as the OCR text.
As well as the OCR text, yeah. And
but the images are scanned from the microphone?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're pretty rubbish quality, but they do, you can make out who's depicted in what way. And
is there text related to the images, or is it just decorations? I mean,
does
the text
captions.
Talk about
great question. I would argue they're never just decoration, Claire. But, you know, when we talked very early about the corpus, we put the illustrations for now for this stage in the too hard basket, but my passion would be that they are included at some stage. I think we want to nut out the gazetteer, like the text wrangling first, and then incorporate the illustrations later. But now that we're having this conversation, I see that might be problematic.
Yeah, because
they're related.
Maybe
yeah.
we changed the
yeah.
priority. But one of the things
exactly.
we did was we had, when we had the OCR cleaned, we had the beginning and end of articles tagged in XML, just kind of basic XML, and the location of images tagged.
Oh, great.
So we know where an image is, we
yes.
don't know what it is.
And captions. So we have a caption.
We have the captions of the images. We have where the image is, what the caption is, but we don't know what the image is.
Oh, that's,
right?
that's great.
Which is like beyond, I think, that.
It was what we were able to afford.
But the images convey a lot about what's going on in the text. It's
yeah.
another
yeah.
it's another way to convey the information that's being, you know, detailed in the text.
And in a lot of ways on initial close reading, amplifies the more problematic aspects of the text.
So I think maybe
to me, the journalism being released in the late 19th century, early 20th, and at the time when France has lost America for a very long
yeah.
time. And to me, it's interesting to see that they are still imagining America when writing about this. And I would like to see how they, the kind of representation of America and other parts of the empire, such as Central Africa, Western Africa, for example. So I would like to see how, in the text, as she said, how they depict each one of these places, and also how they talk about these people living in these places.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, so I think that's a super exciting idea of pulling out these representations of place and characterizing the discourse around them. Because you can imagine like lots of theories about how, you know, places in the South Pacific or Central Africa or the American West were initially described in these sort of exotic terms that became normalized over the course of a century. But Catherine also raised an interesting point here that reminded me of the need for some sort of baseline corpus, because I feel like travelogues were really common as a genre in the 19th century, like Mark Twain wrote one. And I would, if you wanted to get at a way of distinguishing between what is unique to the empire versus attention to the rest of the world, I think it could be interesting to look at other travelogues and see what places they're focusing on to see what's distinct about this journal.
Or just domestic newspapers. As a
yeah.
or a domestic like a
yeah.
Not a baseline but a comparative.
Do you mean domestic in the colonies?
The like metropolitan. Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah,
like a metropolitan France newspaper, and then a colonial domestic oriented.
Okay.
Or multiple colonial domestic.
Yeah.
Newspapers. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. So I guess. Since it's the scholarly framing, if I could, because some people haven't weighed in yet, what questions do you think we've already answered some of this, we should be asking of this data set? What sorts of questions might we ask if we were to include other sorts of data, like what shouldn't we ask if we're talking about post-colonial concerns, what maybe to get us started, what the sorts of things that we should do, we shouldn't do with this sort of information in those regards?
As I saw, this journal has two different parts. One that is fiction, the other one that is more geography, historical related. And I think the map works nice for the geographical part because they include map. I checked one or two numbers and saw that they include maps. But the fiction part, it's a totally different approach.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it should be treated differently.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. I would say that even fiction also can share meanings behind those type of the kind of fictions used back then. We saw, for example, some cartoons or even images. You recall the banana stuff. All of these were used to convey specific meanings. So how do we incorporate and understand many of the ways in which the French used this type of tools to convey their own the idea of the empire?
So how do we pass out different treatments for the fictional narratives and the reporting narratives, irrespective of how accurate or inaccurate they may be, the intent being that they were journalistic, but then also bring together insights from both for this cultural imagination question.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to speak to what we were talking about, Claire, about earlier over coffee, about how to get different descriptions that are different in nature, but talking about a similar concept, or a similar problematic concept was the thing we were talking about initially.
Yeah, so more generally, I was thinking so. You seem to be basing everything on locations, but somehow you want to relate the locations to a description of these locations, right? And basically the descriptions, there will be event descriptions probably. So you probably one thing you want to do is to have to have, in addition to the geotagging, you need to have some processing of events and people in there in these locations. I mean, I will be talking about it a little bit later, but that a description of the events in the location might also give you a different view of what are the important locations.
Locations and events, but also, like, I guess you could say, cultural locations, in the sense of cultural
right, yeah,
concepts
yeah, that
are
sense, yeah.
key yeah, to
yeah.
the to the understanding.
Yeah, originally when I started the idea for this project, I thought what I would do is pull out where they're talking about and see if it correlates to big political events in imperial history. So, you know, the Transvaal War, like would they all of a sudden start talking about South Africa a lot?
Yeah.
And then when I started doing the very early prototypes of it, I'm like, that's, I don't see any indication of that.
Yeah.
And so then my question started to change. But I think that, I think...
That's really what you will get as results. It really depends on what kind of named entities or what kind of processing
right.
techniques you have, right? So one, in my presentation, basically, I talk about different ways of processing corpora, so collection of documents, right? And depending on what you do, you get different results, but
yeah.
also you use different techniques, right? So if you, the first methods I will present is basically event-based, more or less. So, and the idea is you have, for each document, you associate each document with named entities, but of different types, so locations, persons, and in this study was groups or institutions, organizations. So they were studying the Fidel Castro corpora. And basically, based on this, so each document is associated with a set of name entities, and then you do some visualization based on similarity between documents, and you can find, and this shows you, I mean, it's easier to show with a picture, but it gives you an idea of where are the important events. Where.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, I would expect that the Transvaal War would come up with associated with a set of entities and persons and locations that are important with respect to that event. So that's one way. But yeah, I will talk about it again
yeah.
later with pictures. It would be easier to understand.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that the general point is that just focusing just on location won't be enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to also look at persons and
yeah,
maybe other types of entities.
And one of the things I'm hoping that will emerge over the next 2 days is what sorts of decisions should we make early on? Because they're going to, one of the things
of
I'm,
course, yeah.
as I'm hearing, like if we divide between fiction and nonfiction, that's going to have very real ramifications for what we have at the very end of this project. And so there's the, Katie and I were talking about this before, the kind of through line of the humanities decisions that get made at every single point of the project. And so something we've decided early on, like even just like Gear Raising Claire, us decide, saying we're going to start with locations, and you're like, but that ignores all of this other stuff, so that you're going to have very different results at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people question is essential here, and to the historiography, sort of figuring out who are the people being mentioned by their actual names,
mm-hmm.
who are the people who are mentioned as demonyms, as groups of people,
mm-hmm.
Senegalese, you know, Americans, and who doesn't get named, right, is the kind of big question, and how are they still present in the text? How are they absent? What are those? What does that mean? Because I feel like that's one, that's what historians want to write about. They want to write about people.
Yeah.
I have this problem all the time because I write about places and then people say, where's your narrative about actors? Well, and so this is a real problem in this kind of work is there are people in these places, and presumably there are actions that people are taking, which is why place names occur in the text. And so being able to semi-automatically capture that information could be really important to being able to then write and interpret this as history. But NER, you know, is not so great at finding people who don't have proper names.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are raising an important point.
Yeah,
because I am always struggling between these two things. The location, of course. When talking about the French or the British Empire, I want to see the map, to see the places they colonized. On the other hand, I would love also to know about the people. For you to mention the Senegalese, you can mention also Algerians and
right.
so on.
Yeah, right.
So that information, when we see a map, that information is missing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we combine these two things?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, that would help any...
Yeah, so actually, yeah, I had the same question because in your paper, Catherine, I think maybe you took it, so the long paper about the lynching in the States, right?
Uh-huh.
So we could see the map and we could see the location associated with some names and some events, right? So I was wondering how that was done, whether that was done automatically or...
Oh,
I think that was a Google
the Monroe work.
It was semi-automatically, but it was a very...
That's
too
tabular data.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, so it was the captions that appeared with the name and description of the person. That was a string that was drawn from a table, but the table was very laboriously, I mean, it was a 10-year supplementation of a historical data set, so it's a great example. It's probably not feasible for a lot of projects in terms of, that was really...
Yeah.
It was really, like,
so
95%
on
manual.
Long, yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
So we have this really weird problem with our encyclopedia data, which is that the NER picks up demonyms as places. And like in a sense, that's an error.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually really a useful error because they represent...
Yeah.
They represent people in a place.
Yeah.
Who and otherwise that place might not have a presence in your analysis, and so we want to we create like a subset of demonym information. We don't throw that away as an error. And if you could like lean into that error in processing, and do it intentionally, I wonder. I suspect that there are a lot of demonyms in this text.
We are planning to write an article called The Trouble with Boats for the same reason, because the named enumeration
yes.
we run always identifies a boat as
yes.
a location, which
yeah.
seems like an error, but it is a location, and it's one that gets at the kind of interstitial
yeah.
relationship of the empire that would be really interesting to analyze, the kind of like Gilroy's Black Atlantic kind of experience of the boat being a location.
Yeah. A moving location.
A moving location. And, you know, from the computer standpoint, I was saying beforehand that they do exactly what you told them to do, and you told it to look for a place that people go to or come from, and that's what a boat does
yeah.
and the function it fills.
That's
so, yeah,
right.
And how do we... But then, and maybe this is for a later session, the kind of colossal task of actually parsing that out is a whole different issue.
So I think a lot of the knowledge you want to get, you can maybe get through the annotations. Because if you say, if your annotation guidelines, you say the boats, it's
yeah.
difficult to define,
right.
but in this specific case, you could say, okay, the boats should be annotated as a location.
Yeah.
Then you will annotate for you. And then you would hope that your machine learning application will actually learn that boats are locations. Right?
So I have so I worked on exactly this problem over the past year of developing developing annotation guidelines for tagging non-named locations and people and things. So this could include the city, the village as being locations that don't have specific names. One of the things that we ran into was that when you get down into it, everything could be a location.
Mm-hmm.
Right, everything can be used in this locative sense. So this water bottle is a location because this paper is next to it. Right. It has a sort of spatial proximity that every noun that you could see could possibly be a location if you don't. So having more strict rules about what counts as a proper location is going to be important before you get down that slippery slope.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is an essential issue for the scholarly framing because we're not just we're defining for whatever computational algorithm that we're using what we think is, right? And that's going to end up shaping, you know, this gets to what we were talking about before, that the results always have that veneer of being objective, but they're not at all, because I've made all kinds of decisions before I get to those.
And so in our work on ethical visualization, what we're saying is, rather than slide into this like infinite pool of relativism, showing your work and taking a stance, like in some ways an activist scholar stance of, well, this is what we value, and what we're valuing is these historically marginalized groups and perspectives. And so to the point about adding illustrations, in some work on colonial symbols in Australia, what I've found is very strong reference to Indigenous Australians in the symbols, in the visual depiction, and not in the text. So this may be, if we do find some way to incorporate analysis of the images or the content, inclusion of the content of the images, that may be a way to get to identifying the unnamed but very present people who aren't mentioned, included in a demonym.
Also, a lot of times these images, having read a lot of these for my book, these sorts of periodicals, a lot of times the images actually is tangentially related to the text.